Welcome to the Achieve Workplace Culture Podcast, where Randy, Wendy, and Eric explore ideas and strategies for creating and maintaining a healthy workplace.
Hello, and welcome to the Achieve Workplace Culture Podcast. I'm Randy Greaser, one of your hosts. In today's episode, the two big things we're going to be talking about is an article titled The Power of Work Friends. And then we will discuss our concern with some organizations using software to monitor the work and essentially spy on employees. But first, as always, I want to welcome my co-host, Eric Stutzman. Normally, I would also be welcoming Wendy Lowen, but Wendy was unavailable to record our show this month. So instead, I'm happy to welcome Vicky Entz as our co-host for this month. Like Wendy, both Eric and I work with Vicky at Achieve Center for Leadership. Welcome to the show, Vicky. Eric and Vicky, what have you guys been up to the last few days?
Well, the leaves have been falling around here, and I, on Sunday, together with some members of my family, raked up 20 bags of leaves and stuck them out by our curb for pickup later this week, and I'm really enjoying the fall colors and air and all of that, and yeah, I'm just kind of getting ready for winter, I guess.
Winter's coming.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. Similar to Eric, I've been very aware of the weather lately. In general, I think something I've been thinking about a lot is just the time of transition. And so one major way is, of course, with the season. This last weekend, I was actually in Alberta. And so while I was there, I was very surprised to wake up and they had 5 inches of really heavy snow all of a sudden that stuck all weekend. So that was a bit of a jolt. But the second way I was aware of transitions, I was actually there for some family time. We're going through some change and loss as a family. And so I'm just back from some very meaningful and good time with my family. But I have to say, I was very relieved to come back here to Manitoba and there was no snow on the ground.
Yes. And there was, I believe, in Alberta. Yeah. My son is also lives in Alberta. So then I get the weather updates from him. For me, I've moved into a new home office, which is kind of exciting. I got a new whiteboard and I got lists going on. I don't have any artwork yet, so I need to work on that. And if I sound a little different than I normally do, well, that's why. But, speaking of transitions, Vicky, this is a time of transition. And if I think about the different offices I've been in, right? Like sometimes you're in the same space for 5, 10, 15 years. And it's pretty unique when you kind of start from scratch and do it all over again. So I put a lot of thought and effort into my space and my new desk as well. And I definitely have a window where I can look out the window.
Oh, that makes a huge difference.
It does. Yeah, and we're super excited, Vicky, to have you here. I know you listened to the show and many of the conversations that Eric and Vicky and I, Eric, Wendy and I have, we have with you as well. So we're excited about the input that you're going to bring to this show. But on to our first big topic. The article we are reviewing this week comes from Harvard Business Review, and it's written by John Clifton. It's titled The Power of Friends at Work. And the article reviews research data from the Gallup organization that shows having a best friend at work is strongly linked to business outcomes. And yet their research shows that only 3 in 10 employees strongly agree that they have a best friend at work. Now, the main thesis of the article is that companies should care about employees having friends at work because when people have friends at work, they're more committed to their work projects, they communicate and share information better, and they encourage each other to move forward with the mission and vision of the organization. The article then goes on to provide a roadmap for how to help employees build lasting friendships at work, namely by establishing a buddy system, they call it, increasing FaceTime, and by jamming constantly. If you don't know what that means, we'll explain that a little bit later on, and by not forcing it. So before we get into those 4 kind of areas, Eric and Vicky, what's your initial takeaway and feeling about the article?
I've thought about this a lot over the years, especially because I at one time in my career did a lot of workplace mediation, and I kept hearing from people, well, we don't have to be friends, or you don't have to be friends at work. You just have to be good colleagues. And I often would walk away feeling somehow deflated when I heard a manager or leader say something like that. No, we can't force friendships. Obviously, you can't force somebody to be friends, but wow, you know, when you like somebody, it sure is easier to work with them. So just fundamentally, you know, I want to like the people I work with because, you know, I want to be able to trust them. I want to have a relationship with them. I want to feel like they care about me. And isn't that what a friend is? You know, Vicky, what do you think?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, for me too, when I first read it, I mean, for sure. And I can really resonate with the importance of connection. There's been times in my life when whatever work community I was a part of, they were kind of like my family, because like the article talks about, we spend so much of our time at work. And so, especially because I live farther away from my family, you know, so I really resonate with that generally. But I do have to say, I really resonated with it, but I also kind of noticed straight away how they framed the whole notion of framing having a best friend at work actually really stood out for me. And that felt a little narrow.
Specifically, like this notion of best friend, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I have friends at work. I've had friends at work. And I mean, how many best friends can we have? I mean, when I hear the term best friend, I think of kind of a individual person. And I think that's a little much, and personally, to expect all employees and all of us, even you, me, Eric, and Vicky, like, I'm friends with you, but I don't think of you as my best friend. I mean, does that mean we have a problem? I mean, do we really have to be best friends?
Yeah, it seemed rather narrow to me too. And linking it to, I mean, what I also really appreciated is how they talked about, made the big link with loneliness. And I think that's the piece that really resonated for me. I mean, in addition to my role here with Achieve, I'm also I'm a psychotherapist. I work with people all the time. And I have to say, in that realm, this topic of adult friendships and loneliness, it comes up a lot. And that I think just really stood out. And just even just to, I wanted to add in there, you know, I was listening to another podcast recently with Dr. Miriam Kermeyer. She's a clinical psychologist, and she was quoting some research from the U.S. National Institute of Aging that was equating the experience of feeling lonely in a chronic way as akin to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. You know, kind of as that impact on on health, and it's just an interesting take on it. And so I was really resonating with that, and so the importance of it seemed really, really key. But yeah, I thought I was wishing that the article kind of emphasized a broader approach, because I think that best friend analogy could actually turn some people off at the beginning. It caused some anxiety.
It's true, Vicky. It's true. Gallup has talked about the importance of a best friend at work for a long time. It goes back to one of their original books, First Break All the Rules, What the World's Greatest Managers Do Differently. And even in that book, which they wrote maybe 15 years ago now, they talked about that the best performing work teams had people on the team who could answer the question, I have a best friend at work, and say they strongly agree. So it's not a true false question. They measure it on a Likert scale of 1 strongly disagree, 5 strongly agree, or somewhere in between. And when you had people saying, I have a best friend at work, and maybe that, maybe, you know, a best friend, I don't know how people interpret that, right? Because do I have a best friend? I have some great friends at work, but a best friend at work, I have like one best friend in the world, and that person is not in the workplace. So, you know, I agree with you. Maybe the terminology isn't the best, but what I take away from it, I suppose, when I look deeper, or I scratch the surface, I think what they're saying is, do you have people that you really trust and care about, and who really trust and care about you, who you can talk to, you know, they talk about, at the very beginning of the article, they say something like, more than 20% of people don't have friends or family they can count on whenever they need them.
And then they go on and say that, of course, during the pandemic, that's only been exacerbated, right? Mm-hmm. This and exactly what Vicky was talking about, this adult loneliness, people feeling lonely. And so I think it's a timely article, I mean, for us to consider, I mean, both in relationship to our in-person relationships, but also our virtual. How are we promoting relationships virtually? I'd like us to kind of get into the nitty gritty of the article, where they highlight those 4 specific areas. And so, I mean, we always like articles that provide some action, right? And so the article sets the stage and then it goes on to building lasting, how to build lasting friendships. And so the very first thing they say is establish a buddy system. And when I read that, I initially kind of, the whole word buddy makes me feel like I'm in, you know, kindergarten. I'm looking for a buddy. Like, I don't know if I need a buddy in the workplace, but again, I kind of get what they're getting at. Like, do people have someone that they are connected to at work, particularly new employees?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I really heard that when I read that, in my mind, I translated it right away to mentorship. I mean, that's how that really makes sense to me, in the sense of, because they talk about having a buddy, and especially when people in their first year, when they're first starting, new hires, you know, the value of having they're paired with someone. And I was really relating with that, you know, and kind of like what we were saying before, just having a broader definition of this notion of best friend. You know, I think a mentor or a buddy or whatever we call it, isn't necessarily going to be someone you're going to hang out with or want to do a whole bunch of other stuff with, but it's a structured, goal-focused relationship that I think provides that opportunity to build some of that trust. And
they make the point that the key to the success of that is the frequency of interaction. Like, mm-hmm. It's one thing if you come into the organization, you say, hey, you know, Jane's going to be your quote buddy or mentor or person to show you around. And then, you know, I check in with you once and then I don't ever check in with you again. So frequency is important.
Yeah. In fact, they quote a Microsoft study where they look at the first 90 days on the job and where buddies met together at least 8 times in those first 90 days. You saw that the new hires said that their buddy was instrumental in them becoming more productive 97% of the time. Like, that was, that's really high, right? But if you only met once during those first 90 days, then only about 50% of people said it was worth, you know, that it helped them be more productive. Mm-hmm. And you can think about it in terms of, like, okay, I start in a new place and I'm asking myself, like, who are these people and how do I connect with them and what are they like? And if I had somebody saying, hey, Eric, you know, why don't you join us for lunch? There's a bunch of us that get together for lunch on Tuesdays and they introduce you and then you meet some people and then you're more likely to develop friendship. I might not become a friend with that buddy, but right, I might become friends with their buddies, right?
Yeah. And I think about our own workplace, and if I think back through our history, I think we probably have done this informally. I think we could, I mean, one of the things that happens, I mean, when we talk in this podcast is we actually come away with our own ideas. And I think we could probably be more intentional about this. I think sometimes we assume that a new hire knows who to go talk to, and or we assume that the person that's sitting next to them will take on this role. But I wonder if we should actually be more intentional about
that. Yeah. When I read this article, I just thought that's a great idea. Why don't we just appoint somebody to be that person's buddy? I know that's not your favorite term, Randy, but their guide, their mentor, as Vicky said, whoever, just somebody to connect them into the organization. Go ahead, Vicky.
Like you're saying, like, and maybe with some coaching, I think that was one of the other takeaways I thought too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes people, you know, you might suggest that they buddy up or they connect with so-and-so to show them the ropes and then leave them to it. But perhaps sometimes with a little bit of coaching, of just encouraging a certain amount of structure to meet together, sometimes that might be helpful just to get the ball rolling.
I definitely agree with this principle and premise. And I encourage our listeners to do as we've done here, to think about how well you're doing it. And again, if we're honest, I don't think we do it intentionally enough. And I think we can start doing it more intentionally.
Mm-hmm. And I think we also need to pay particular attention to how we bring people on virtually. We've had a number of employees start during the pandemic when we weren't in person. We still have employees, some people who are remote. We often hire, for our organization, contractors who don't even live anywhere nearby where we are. They might live, you know, 1,000 miles away. So how are we bringing them in? Can we pair them with people too? And I think this is a great prompt for us.
Well, and that's a great segue into their second point, because it relates to the reality of many of our listeners' hybrid workforce is increased face time. So they're saying, actually, let's, you know, how do you promote friendships at work is let's spend time together. And, you know, everybody knows that, of course, in person, that's easy to do. But what do we do virtually? I mean, I'm still amazed by how many people I have conversations with you know, that you know, over Zoom or over FaceTime or over, you know, Google Meets, and I can't see your face. Like, you know, and I'm like, hey, I'm just wanting to have a meeting with you. I'm wanting to see your emotion. I'm wanting to you see my facial. Like, even when we record this podcast, we're looking at each other, you know, on mm-hmm. a video so that we can, you know, spend time together. And that body language makes a really big thing. So their second big thing was increased FaceTime. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, that's a clear benefit to that. But again, I was thinking about this quite a lot because, of course, we've had a lot of practice with this in the last couple of years. And you know, there's the two sides to it. On one hand, we want to encourage the face-to-face meetings. But then there's also been so much talk about the fatigue of sitting in front of a camera all the time, of looking at a screen. And so I was thinking about the value of how increasing FaceTime, but also the diversity of diversifying the way that we connect. So I don't need to always meet with someone in person or face to face, but if we've done some of that, then our follow-up emails or a phone call can be that much more meaningful. But sometimes it's good to have the break from the screen as well.
Yeah, sure. And I think so there's two realities. We can talk about the reality of people working remotely. There's also people who are working together, and more, mm-hmm. many places people are together at least some of the time. Almost everybody I talk to now has been told they need to be in the office at least some of the time. And for our workplace, most people are in the office at least some of the time, not 100%, but we've started planning every other week, an intentional coffee hour or / drinks after work time, where we provide as an organization some beverages or some food or snacks and say, hey, let's get together, because we think it's important that people have an opportunity just to connect, not just on a screen, Vicky, because yeah, we get fatigued from that. And there's all kinds of stuff we can also pick up by being in person with each other. But let's step back just a minute. Like, if you go back to some other stuff that Gallup has written about this too, and that we've implemented for ourselves, even just seeing a face, like a picture of somebody, increases your empathy for that person. So one of the things we did is we took all of our contractors, trainers, and consultants who are spread out across North America. We took their pictures and we put them on a bulletin board in a central place in our office. So we just see their faces more often, and it mm-hmm. makes a difference. We create a newsletter, and in our newsletter, we always feature pictures of people, staff, trainers, contractors, because we want people to see faces. It increases empathy and connection.
One soundbite at the article I want to touch on is it's just five words: talk more and email less. And that's always been a huge thorn for me. When I get an email from someone that is like, it took you an hour to write the email, I'm like, why in the world did you not pick up the phone call? Like, and I've actually coached some staff in that regards. Like, that was way too. I mean, first of all, most of our staff know that I don't read long emails because I don't spend a lot of time on a computer due to concussion symptoms I have. And so when I get this long email, I'm like, come on, like, why didn't you pick up the phone call or come to my office? And it takes way more time. It's not very productive. So that little line there, talk more and email less, I'm like, that's right. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And I know we've had that conversation before too. I know that's really important to you. And at the same time, I would again just say, like, recognizing that I agree with that, and also recognizing that maybe sometimes there's some coaching that can happen of how to then also use the other forms of communication well, right? And because speaking for myself, I know sometimes the challenge that's unique for me, like today I was having this issue this morning. A trainer was trying to get a hold of me, but I had some meetings. And so sometimes I can be hard to get a hold of spontaneously. And so so trying to find that balance of, let's make sure we find a time and connect in person. But then there's other times where if you send the email first, we can at least start the conversation and follow up later.
Yeah, I mean, this section of the article reminds me very much of, Eric, of the chapter in our book, The Culture mm-hmm. Question, that you, Wendy, and I wrote with Mike LeBoon, called, you know, Foster Meaningful Relationships. And again, like, mm-hmm. it's just, I think it's incumbent upon leaders of organizations to be intentional about thinking, how can you foster relationships? When there's meaningful relationships in the workplace, and when we increase FaceTime, People are more naturally share information. Little conflicts don't escalate out of control because I actually know the person. Like when when I don't know you and you say something that irritates me, I might think you're a terrible human being. But if I know you and have a history of you, I can go, oh, like, well, that was out of context. I should check in with that person. So there's lots of things that we can do to really foster meaningful relationships. We just need to become intentional about doing it.
Yeah, Randy, one of the things that we say in our book is that the main thing I think that organizations, leaders and organizations who are planning things, committees who are planning things need to pay attention to is our different needs for different ways to connect. Some people really like to go out for a beer after work. Other people don't because they don't drink beer, right? Some people would love to get together for breakfast and other people would think that's a terrible idea. I can't think in the morning. Some people, you know, love a potluck and other people that stresses them out. Some people like one-on-one relationships. Other people love the big group things. Some people have more needs. Some people have less needs. The point is, are we creating a variety of ways for people to connect and get to know each other? Essentially, I think the reason we need best friends at work, or we need, you know, I like to just say strong relationships at work, strong friendships at work, is because then they can hold some heat, right? If, like you, to your point, Randy, if you say something that bothers me, but I've had a history of positive work relationship with you, positive, and I know what's going on in your life, I can let it go, or I know how to approach you. I can say, oh, I want to talk about this with you, Randy. But if I don't have that, then it's just annoying. Right. And then I'm more likely to shut down and I can't do work.
Yeah. Well, and I would add to that, I think that links back to our original point of the importance of FaceTime, right? Or like actual, like whether it's on the phone or video or in person, but the actual conversation rather than email, for example, because it's in those kinds of FaceTime, like right now, like face-to-face kind of interactions where we can check those little misunderstandings, like can nip so many things in the bud, whereas that's pretty much very hard to do through just email or asynchronous communication styles.
Let's move on to their third point here about improving relationships at work and friendships at work. Jam constantly. I tell you, this author really likes those buzzwords, eh? The buddy system, the best friend, jam constantly. What does he mean by this? Well, he means that we should work together. Jam, we should be musicians in a band together who enjoy spending time together. And basically what I read here is that, you know, we need to foster teamwork as well. Like we don't want to create an environment where everyone just works in isolation and never connects to each other.
Yeah.
That's what I take away from the word jam. What about you two?
Yeah, that's what really stood out for me too, was I heard teamwork and just the creativity that can build with collaboration, you know, and just that opportunity. Again, I think it harkens to like being in the same space at the same time, whether it's on a screen or in person, but being able to like kind of what we're doing now, we're kind of jamming right now, right? Like being able to go back and forth and build off each other's comments. And there's something, there's a different kind of creativity that can come with that. As long as it has those qualities, or it's amplified if it has those qualities we talked about already of some trust and acceptance, and then we're willing to take some risks, right? Willing to put ideas out there that we're not sure if we're going to say it right. And that all takes some vulnerability.
It does. I have three colleagues that I work with fairly closely who I sit near. One of them was really stuck a couple of weeks ago on some copy that they needed to write. And two of the other people came over and the three of them sat together and they worked out the copy together. And it was dynamite. It was fun to watch. I was kind of listening a little bit, but I was doing my own work. But all three of them reported in different ways that they loved that. That was a great time working together. And I know one of my roles as a leader, I have always felt is connecting people. And so I will often say to somebody, can you check that with so-and-so on the team? Or can you bring somebody else in to look at that with you? Not even always because it needs a second set of eyes, but because people need relationship. And often a second set of eyes does make something better. You see things differently and you get to jam. Like, hey, I'm working on this cool design. I'm working on this great text. I'm working on a new workshop. What do you think? And then you get to jam and riff off of each other and build. Like it's fun.
Yeah, and just for the record, I like this terminology jam better than buddy. I get that. Like even if you don't play, like I don't play in a band or musical instrument, but I listen and And I can see and appreciate the joy of a band that works together. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is when we foster meaningful relationships at work, when we encourage people to have friends at work, we foster the ability for, you know, Eric, that word, and for the magic to happen, for for people to really, you know, gel with each other. Their last point of four is don't force it. In fact, they say those all day but mandatory happy hours, I mean, Eric, you kind of spoke to back, and those kindergarten full of games and colorful toys, I you know, are not for everybody. I remember one time I had a supervisor who at the beginning of each meeting, she would ask us to draw during the meeting, and I was supposed to draw and creativity, and I hated it. I was like, I don't want to do this. You know, this is not fun, you know, but she forced it down my throat. And so I you know, I was like, okay, this is what I drew. This is what it means. These are my feelings. And it's like, but really I'm angry that you made me do something. And I think that's what they're saying, is don't do that.
Yeah. The importance of choice. And that's a bit of a theme in our conversation with this one, I think, right? The importance of diversity and recognizing different ways of connecting, and so that it fits for different people. And yeah, and I, just as you were talking there, Randy, I was thinking like this, don't force it, it both like any singular events or activity, not to force it. But I also thought about it as over time, like there's a danger too in maybe too much of a good thing. Like, you know, one team building activity might be good, but if now we're having to do it every Monday afternoon, you know, that can also, I think, turn around and work against the goal, because people start to feel resentful or frustrated.
I had several friends that worked for the same large not-for-profit organization that got together for coffee every morning for 15 minutes, maybe 20, and everybody, it was weird if you didn't come. You were expected to go. And I know that for some of them, sometimes they were just like, I just need to do my work. I don't want to sit here and talk every morning for 15 minutes at the same time. Even though there was probably great benefits to it, maybe it felt a little too mandatory for some people.
It's too much of a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, again, the big takeaway there, and I think this is actually something that we've done a good job at internally. I've noticed communication coming from you, Vicky and Eric. I noticed that language of choice, like, you know, like it's not mandatory that you show up to this lunch meeting just a lunch event that we're having, that someone's sharing about something. And I think that's the big takeaway from that point, is really, really, yeah, don't force it. But I think the big summary here with this article, and I think we are all saying we agree, is that we would all use wording slightly different. We think that it's important to have meaningful relationships. Absolutely important to have friends at work. We're not so sure that this mandatory best friend. I don't think that not having a best friend at work has, I don't think I've ever had a best friend at work, but I don't think that's gotten in the way of my productivity, my engagement, my appreciation for other people. It is time for us to move on to our next big topic. This is the section where each month we look at something that's current, either in the media or an organization, or, you know, maybe an organization we're working with. So Eric, you're going to provide some context for this discussion this week. Why don't you set the stage for us?
You bet. This is perhaps the opposite of what we've just been talking about, how to kill your workplace. We're going to talk about bossware, otherwise known as software for monitoring your employees. The reason this has come up for us has been in our news feeds recently. There's been one of the major Canadian provinces passed legislation that employers with more than 25 people have to disclose now to their employees if they're using software to track their work. And
so that means the other provinces don't?
That's right. Most provinces don't have something like this, and most states don't. There are a few states in the United States that have similar software. But U.S. legislation, there's federal legislation in the United States that gives employers the legal right to monitor employees, all employees' verbal and written communication for business purposes. So anything that an employee writes or says that has anything to do with business can be monitored by you know, a workplace in the United States, which means that they can use Bossware. They can track what you're doing. Now, just to give a little context.
Is this the name of the actual program? You said Bossware a couple times there.
It's sort of the slang. Some people use
it's slang. Bossware, okay.
Right? But it's just it's not really spyware either. It's tracking. I think.
I call it spyware. You call it Bossware. Got it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Anyway, there's lots of different ways that it happens. There's email tracking, which is just all emails get saved and they can be tracked. And over 50% of companies track employees' emails. Now, I don't really know if we do or not. We certainly don't intentionally, but I bet you everybody's emails are saved on a server somewhere. So I bet you there's a lot of companies that could track but don't, but have the capacity because all the emails are saved. That could be us even. We don't track employees' emails intentionally, but many employees do. Then there's time tracking, which is something that we've done for a long time with like even just like cards that you punch when you go in and out, but now it's much more sophisticated with software, and you can track how much time people have Microsoft Word open and how much they're using Microsoft Word, and you know, so they can time track, file tracking, what you're saving, how often you're pressing save, how often you're opening files, screenshots and sharing. So there's a piece of software that takes a screenshot of your employees' screens every 10 minutes and saves that screenshot so that you can go in and see what your employees are doing all day long. There's something called keystroke logging, which logs every single keystroke you make on your keyboard. And that has all kinds of privacy concerns because you might use your keyboard to enter in payment information during a break when you're buying something, or maybe you sent the accounting person your social security or social insurance numbers, and then somebody's tracking that somewhere. But all of these things are being used right now across North America and the world to track employees. So what do you think? Legitimate, not legitimate? Where do you go with this?
I have a very big, emphatic reaction to this, all of this, and it might not surprise you. Don't do this. Like if you're struggling with employee productivity, employee engagement, employee innovation, I can name 10 other things that you should do before you do this. Because the moment you do this, and it gets found out, and it will get found out. It will get found out, even if you don't. I mean, again, Eric, you're saying that Ontario, you have to inform employees. But let's say you don't have to inform. It will get found out. The moment you get found out, you will ruin the most important component of a management-employee relationship, and that is trust. Mm-hmm. And we've, time and time again, I mean, when I'm giving keynote speeches in our books, like, trust is the most important element of leadership. And once you have it, you have to work at keeping it. And doing this will not keep it. It'll ruin it, and you will never, ever get it back. So don't do this. If you're doing it now, stop it.
Awesome, Randy.
We heard it
Vicky,
here.
So do you have a different view?
Well, yeah, I was thinking, can I conjure up a different view? No, I have to say, I think my initial response to this whole topic was certainly one of mild horror. You know, especially the way, and you know, in the article that we read, I know there's lots of different things written on it, but it was very much framed as software that's flagging persons and like spyware kind of thing. And so absolutely just smacks of a huge invasion of privacy. And so for me, like Randy, I appreciate you very much speaking about that from that point of view of establishing, you know, workplace culture. And as a leader, I resonated with this immediately from the worker perspective, because I'm someone who, even before the pandemic, I worked a fair bit remotely. And so, you know, this is something I really relate to, just what that would be like. And so, so absolutely, it seemed like a huge invasion of privacy. I have to say, though, I mentioned spending the weekend with my family, and this not because of this podcast, but this actually just came up with a conversation with one of my brothers. And we were just talking about this topic a little bit. And I told him that my initial response was just as I explained. And he was actually surprised at this. He's not an employer. He's a self-employed person and doesn't have any employees currently. And so he was just imagining this. But he said his response was, well, of course you would want to know that your people haven't just turned on their computers and gone off golfing. That was his response. He's like, don't you care about that? And so he likes to stir the pot. So we had a good debate about that. But
that clearly begins with an assumption that employees don't care about their work, that are only there to collect a paycheck, that, I mean, which is everything that we talk against. Like, most employees, you know, there's a small sliver of employees. There's one, two, if I'm generous, 3% that truly are completely disengaged and are trying to sabotage and trying to cheat the system. But but if we treat all of our employees with that same lens, again, we're going to ruin the trust that we've worked so hard to build.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to say, just so that I don't totally throw my brother under the bus, is that we I've got several, so I'm going to just leave that vague. What we both absolutely agreed on, though, was the issue of transparency, which I think is the main point of this article too. And so, you know, he was arguing that he saw a role for it, but absolutely that it needs to be something that people are aware of. So I just have
legitimate business purposes, there aren't that many, but one of the ones that I found, I read multiple articles on the topic thinking about this, because I have the same reaction as you, Randy. Mm-hmm. One, and Vicky, one of the things that people say is legitimate is, for some organizations, you have to keep track of files for audit purposes. You have to, if you're treating sensitive information of people, your organization deals in sensitive information, you need to make sure your employees aren't sharing that with their friends on social media. You need to make sure that stuff is being kept secure. And, you know, for audit purposes, you might need to track files and how files are managed. So perhaps there are some legitimate business cases for some types of monitoring, but taking a screenshot every 10 minutes, come on, like, really? Build a different business then. Build a different relationship with your employees. Hire people who care about wanting to make a difference in the world. Hire people who are there because they're, you know, and help them see how what they're doing makes a difference. And then they're going to engage anyway. Like, think about engagement differently rather than monitoring. And, you know, Vicky, you're talking about, I think this story with your brother reminded me about something, you know, sometimes people, it's about yourself. People have, I think some managers and leaders have a hard time trusting that fully remote employees are doing their work, right? And for them, I'd say there have been 150 studies in the last 2 years that will tell you that remote employees are more productive or as productive as the people in the office. Don't worry about that. Get them the right tools, keep them connected, help them see the purpose. You know, they're going to be fine. Don't worry about monitoring them.
Yeah. And I can see the idea of, is this also a way to measure outcomes? Like, are people getting their work done? Are they doing that? But as to what you were saying before, I mean, I think there's a huge range of ways that can happen. And there's a very big difference between, you know, having ways like, maybe I'm trying to find a way again where this might make some sense, but, you know, maybe there's some kind of tracking or monitoring that might link to measuring outcomes, but that's very different from the screenshots every 10 minutes.
I mean, I've never sat in a room with other leaders where we discussed implementing this, but if I was sitting in the room at whatever organization is implementing this, I can imagine the discussion with the managers in the room would go something like this. We need to do something because our employees are not being as productive as they need to be. We're not being as innovating. We're losing profit share, or we're not doing, you know, whatever it is, but there's a problem. There's a problem, and the fixation is going to be on employees. Something is wrong with the employees. You know, they're not carrying their weight. They're not doing what they should do. And here's this great new tool that can help us monitor, so that do we punish people? What do we do with this information once we have it, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I would encourage, if you're sitting in a room having that conversation, I would encourage you to reframe the conversation to be, okay, fair enough. Employees aren't engaged. We're not as productive as we need to be. We're not as innovative as we need to be. Instead of saying we need to find out which employees are bad and weed them out, or we need to find out which employees, you know, we need to instead say, what could we do as leaders to improve engagement, productivity, and innovation? What is our role? What is our role? What are we doing wrong that is allowing this to happen? You know, and it's a reframe. And if you reframe that conversation, the strategies you're going to come to deal with those issues are not going to be, let's implement bossware.
It's fundamentally different. It's a fundamentally different conversation, and it acknowledges the leader's role in setting a tone and leading a culture where people want to engage, right? And the leader plays a huge outsized role in making that happen. The leadership does. So let's have that conversation. Randy, that was well said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're just kind of at the beginning of our rant and rave section, but that felt like a rant already. We'll see if we can smooth this over. Just as a summary, I'll be really curious to monitor this for them. The spyware is going to become even more creative, even more, well, I say creative in a negative way, but it's going to become more invasive. I think we're just a tip at the iceberg about how this tracking software is going to work. And I think we're going to continue to see employees in those organizations. I don't think they're going to see the outcomes that they hope by using it. I think they're actually going to see worse outcomes. I think that people are going to become more disengaged, and they're going to leave organizations, and they're going to go to organizations that have trusting leaders that don't micromanage people. I want to share one of my favorite all-time stories, that, and I don't think I've shared it on this podcast before, to kind of make this point, and then we'll move on to our next section. When we were writing the book, The Culture Question, I interviewed some of our staff who had previously said they like working where they work. And I asked this one individual, I said, you said in your, performance management view, you like working here. I'm just curious, why? Can you name why you like working here? And he has a really dry sense of humor. And he said, because you don't judge me for when I go to the bathroom. And I said, oh, well, no, I don't pay any attention to your bathroom habits, but I'm really curious about why you would say that. And she said, well, I have a friend who works at a call center, and she's literally judged in time for when she goes to the bathroom. And in fact, that makes her more nervous, and she has to go to the bathroom more often. Of course it will. And so we continued the conversation, and the conversation, it wasn't about not me judging when he goes to the bathroom, but it was that you trust me. You trust me to organize my work. You trust me to get things done. You trust me. That's why I like working here. And I've never forgotten that story, partially because it's just funny and hilarious, but it really, really makes this point. That once you have trust, don't destroy it. Okay. We are on to the next section of our show, where each of us is going to share something that makes us happy and excited, that we want to rave about, or something that makes us scratch our head, kind of like what we just did. I feel like that whole section was a rant. And scratch our head and say, you've got to be kidding me. So, yeah, take it away. What do you folks have this week?
You bet. I'll start off with a bit of a rant. So I went to a conference very recently at which I was sitting on a panel, and it was a conference that was involved in business transitions, buying businesses, selling businesses, finding finances for that. There was a lot of talk and a lot of questions related to, how do you find funding? How do you come up with a fair price for your business? What happens if somebody acquires your business and wants to reduce the, number of staff on your team? What kind of legal professionals do you need to work with, et cetera? All legitimate questions. But the surprising absence of talking about the impact of a business transition on existing employees was startling to me. And it really made me feel a bit sick to my stomach. Here's a bunch of wealthy people, mostly, not all, but many of them wealthy, powerful people talking about selling and acquiring businesses and not thinking about the real lives of all those people who work in those businesses, and how they could do these processes in a way that is beneficial to everyone, rather than beneficial to a bottom line, somebody's bottom line. And I guess that really bothered me. I thought, and I'm sure I didn't hear all the conversations. Obviously I didn't, but the ones that I did hear weren't there.
And I've seen that play out in a couple organizations where I've had conversations, or we've helped in our consulting role, where there's been a merger in particular, right? Mm-hmm. In particular, and again, when you don't pay attention to people, when you don't pay attention to the really you know, minute details of how to integrate two separate cultures, and then we merge them together. When you don't pay attention to people, I mean, I sense you kind of cynically saying that, Eric, a lot of people here were motivated by the money in this sort of environment. How do we buy businesses and enhance the wealth that they create? When you don't pay attention to the people, you're not going to be able to do that other thing that you want to do, right?
So absolutely not. Like no. You can make more money by paying attention to people than the other way around.
Yeah. Okay. For me, I have a bit of a rave that turns into a rant. Opposite. I have a bit of a rant that turns into a rave. Okay. So, you know, right now, I mean, in spite of the fact that the world is calling for that, we are going to be entering a recession. We're in a recession. We're almost to a recession. Who knows? One of the really counterintuitive dynamics is that there are very few people without a job. Most people who want a job have a job. So unemployment rate is quite low by historical standards. Although in certain communities, in certain countries, in certain, you know, geographical areas, that is not true. And I have a friend who lives in a rural community, and he for the last, several years has struggled to find permanent employment. And so he's had some term jobs where, okay, we're going to hire you to do something for 6 months. And then the classic, we might extend you another 6 months, but we're not going to know until the month before. and so he has lived with this kind of fear and uncertainty around not knowing when not knowing if his income is going to stay the same or not. And when I talk to him, there's definitely a sense that some of these employers could actually offer him permanent employment, but they're playing the system because it advantages them slightly to make more money. If, you know, if it's seasonal, if, like, you know, we'll hire you for 6 months, and that, you know, and so that's, to me, that's always left a bad taste. And I talked to him recently, and he actually, in a small community, he finally found permanent employment. And he has just been like, there's been such a relief and a stress that has dissipated because now he has permanent employment. And so I guess, you know, for workplaces who kind of play that system, don't. And you know, people need stability. People need to know if they're going to have a place to show up in 6 months from now. And just a shout out to this, you know, organization that did hire him. Like, when you are able to provide someone with permanent employment, it does a world of difference for their lives. So that's kind of my shtick today.
Yeah.
What about
great.
You, Vicky? What do you
yeah.
got?
Yeah. Well, I have a rave, and I thought I would keep mine. Mine's a little more local, so to speak. I feel like you're talking about some bigger picture kinds of things, but mine's connected back to our own organization, something that happened within our own group, and also just I connect with personally. And I think I was thinking about it because it's also links to what we were talking about earlier as well. As I mentioned very briefly at the start, this last little while for me has held a lot of personal changes and some loss. And so I've been navigating that quite a bit lately. And as I've been working these last weeks, it's felt pretty heavy. I've been pretty fatigued at times. But one of the things that happened last week, which wasn't directly about me at all, but I really benefited from, was just last week, one of our staff was having her last day, or would be soon, part of her choice to move on. And it was part of her own career development. And very spontaneously, someone in the staff suggested an informal meetup after work, where whoever was able and available, we went across the street, we enjoyed a drink, snack with her, we had some good laughs, reminiscing. And so obviously this was very positive. And as I said, it really wasn't about me, it was about her and the time together. But I wanted to highlight that for me, this connected with what we talked about today, because it also was such a boost for me and just a reminder of the positivity of the importance of what we've been talking about today, that building up of the social well-being. It was such a welcome time to connect and focus as a group, but also for me just to kind of shift and focus on another part and feel like there's other, you know, life is bigger than any one event. And so it was just a really valued thing. And I really thought about how that kind of thing, though, can only happen. Those kinds of things build the kind of trust and connection we're talking about, but they can also only happen when that trust and connection was there. Because if that wasn't, I never would have wanted to go when I'm feeling vulnerable and kind of heavy. And so that influence kind of flows both ways. So that stood out as a bit of a rave and something local that happened that was important.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it is soon time for us to sign off and get on with our day and do some other work. What do you folks have up work-wise this week?
Well, tomorrow I am presenting at a conference of human resource professionals on leadership-related topics that come out of our Don't Blame the Lettuce book. So I'm excited about that, being in front of a live audience. I enjoy that a great deal and the energy of that. So that's a big thing. I'm also looking at finding a chief financial officer to work with. We've been working with a fractional chief marketing officer, and I'm looking for a fractional chief financial officer. I'm really enjoying bringing in people who have high degrees of speciality in a particular area to help, not full-time, but part-time with some leadership around systems, around what other organizations are doing. So that's an exciting part of my week.
I have never heard that term. What was that? Fractional?
Fractional chief financial officer or fractional chief marketing officer. They're people who are highly specialized who small organizations or even medium-sized organizations couldn't afford to have full-time or don't need full-time, but can pay for a fraction of their position, a part of their position to do work. So they might work for you for 3 hours a week or 10 hours a week, but they provide their expertise.
Well, that's my phrase of the day. Never heard that before. Very interesting. for me, so one of the things I'm actually really looking forward to and excited to be able to turn my attention back to this, I'm involved in a book project as well that's not due until next year. So we actually don't even have a title for it yet, but it's focused on the well-being of counselors and caregivers. And part of that process is we were able to do a survey similar to what you folks did with your books as well with Achieve Publishing. And so I'm looking forward to doing some follow-up interviews with some people and diving in a little deeper to their views and perspective on their experiences of well-being as helpers and counselors. So that'll be a chunk of my week coming up.
Yeah. It's been really fun for us to you know, offer new research to the world of, you know, whatever it is that we're writing and talking about. So in a lot of our books, we do some survey and research. So I'll be really curious to see what you come up with, Vicky. For me, you know, speaking of writing, I'm in a bit of a writing slump. I mean, it's been less than a year since Eric and Wendy and I released Don't Blame the Lettuce. And I think I've written one or two blogs since then, and I'm in a bit of a drought. And I'm really, really wanting to kind of like just break through it and write again, because writing is it's just like I run once a week. I run 5 kilometers once a week. I do biking and I do weight. So I do other things too. But if you miss a week of running, that third week is really hard, right? So you got to stay consistent with it. And that's how writing is. I find that when you take this long break from it, it's hard to get going again. But then once you get going again, you know, it can go even well. So my goal this week is to, you know, kind of put on my writing cap and write something, and you know, maybe something out of this conversation of the day will spur us on. Vicky, once again, thank you for stepping in for Wendy. I believe Wendy's planning to join us next month, but I mean, our goal here, just so you know, there are going to be times in the years ahead where Eric or Wendy or I won't be able to be here for an event because of a vacation or whatever, or illness or whatever might happen. And our goal is to bring on some guest co-hosts. So Vicky is our first guest co-host. Thank you so much. And I mean, I think I'd like to have you back on again.
Oh yeah. That's been great, Vicky. I really appreciated your
thanks for having me. I'd love to come back sometime.
It's been very easy and free flowing. And that's been great. I do want to highlight too, coming up, some events that you might be interested in. Eric mentioned that he's doing a presentation tomorrow. That's a private event, but he does have some public open enrollment workshops coming up as well that anybody listening here can attend virtually. Just go to our website at achievecenter.com. And you'll find that. He's got November 2, he'll be presenting Leadership Insights, which will be very similar to the presentation he presents tomorrow, I believe. Mm-hmm. Then on November 30th, he's presenting our one-day workshop, Management and Supervision. So go to our website and take a look there, and hopefully we'll see one or two of you there. Okay, everyone, thanks for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the show. And until next month, farewell.
Looking for free resources and training in the area of leadership and workplace culture? Be sure to check out our website at AchieveCenter.com. Achieve, C-E-N-T-R-E.com.